Hello, you're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and taken the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lissa Marquardt. I am a certified career and life coach. My passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. My background in career development came from 30 years of working with high school and college students in Long Beach and Huntington Beach, California. And this is that time in life when the predictable question of those students is, what are you going to do with your life? And for most of them, that's an extremely scary question. They're confused because they really have not had much experience or exposure to make that kind of a decision. And they kind of have to go by what they've read about or heard about or what others suggest that they might be good at. But for some, they have the experience of living careers through their parents' work. And sometimes that provides them with a hell yes, and sometimes that provides them with a hell no. My guest today is Alex Jacobson. Alex grew up in Sandpoint and is the chef and owner of the Pack River Store. Alex made a decision to go to the California Culinary Academy in San Francisco and gained 8 years of experience as a chef in the Bay Area before deciding to come back to Sandpoint to live his dream along with his wife, Brittany. They purchased the Pack River Store, and they just happened to purchase it from Alex's mother, Arlene, who had owned it for 18 years, providing that comfort food foundation for Pack River Store that we all know it for today. We're going to go to break, and when we return, Alex is going to join us and share how he and the Pack River Store have come to be what they are today. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Have you visited Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet lately? They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, and they now stock ammo and knives as well. Of course, Grunberg Schloss carries U.S. and world coins and paper money, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5 on Triangle Drive just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 208-263-6060. Grunberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet, 263-6060.
Hi, this is Shane from North Auto Collision in Bonner Prairie, here to talk to you today about aftermarket parts. Did you know that around 85% of all insurance estimates are written to include aftermarket parts on your car? Many of these parts are made in China. Not only do they fit poorly and offer minimal corrosion protection, but they can also void your warranty. Here at North Auto Collision, not only do we think this is wrong, but we're doing something about it. That's why we're proud to introduce our new comp program. Here's how it works. If your insurance company is only willing to pay for aftermarket parts, our comp program will cover the cost to use original manufacturer parts. If you drive a Ford, we're going to use Ford parts. If it's a Toyota, Toyota parts. You get the picture. So combined with the great quality and customer service you're already accustomed to at North Idaho Collision, our comp program is just another way we're looking out for you, this time in an unprecedented way. Some exclusions may apply, but not many. Remember, it's always your choice where you get your vehicle repaired. So tell your insurance company, I'm going to North Idaho Collision in Bonner Prairie. Thank you for your time, and we look forward to serving you.
For all your shopping needs, the place to go is Yolk's Fresh Market in Ponderay. They've got it all under one roof. An in-store bakery and deli, a meat department with certified Hereford beef and fresh seafood, a truly fresh produce department, your own in-house pharmacy, general everyday items for your home, office, or vehicle, a floral department, Nature's Corner, a quality natural organic food section. Yolk's is part of your life and part of our community. Yolk's Fresh Market.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
KBFI 1450, KSPT 1400, and 97.1 FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and have taken the risks to do work and live lives that they genuinely love. I'm Lisa Marquardt, a certified career and life coach, and my passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. My guest today is Alex Jacobson, and Alex is the chef and owner at the Pack River Store. Welcome, Alex.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking time out today from getting away from the restaurant and the store. Come on out and talk to us and let us know a little bit about what's going on there and how you got there.
Thank you.
And so, as I said in the top of the show, it's like, you know, to have that experience where you watch a parent or somebody that you, you know, spend a lot of time with growing up kind of give you some exposure to a whole different career path or a career path that, you know, maybe you thought of or maybe you didn't. How did that play out for you? And, you know, what ideas did you get from that?
I mean, yeah, definitely my mom was a role model. She bought the Pack River Store in 2000. It was pretty close to a failing business at the time. And she decided to make food to try to, you know, grow it and make it a successful business. She started with just cold deli sandwiches, and then from there it grew into warm sandwiches, rotisserie chicken, pizza, and the whole deli case thing that she did.
Awesome. So it was just, when we were talking over break, you said it was basically beer and cigarettes when she bought it.
It was beer, cigarettes, and dusty candy bars.
And what was her vision? I mean, and how did that come about for her?
Her vision was not working for Wells Fargo anymore and not being a banker and not being a part of that whole grind that, you know, you don't see your kids. She was working 16 plus hours a day. She was a market area manager. And she wanted to get back to life and be a part of her, you know. Yeah. I have a brother, and she just wanted to be a mom again and not have to push the limits of living, you know, the crazy life of being a market area manager for Wells Fargo.
Yeah, I hear you. Which is exactly what this show is all about, because there are a lot of people out there listening that are doing exactly that, and whether or not they have exactly the vision of what that is going to be. I just love the inspiration that hearing somewhat like someone like your mom would say, like, all right, you know what? I'm going to do this because I want to live my life differently.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. I think that she has an amazing entrepreneur spirit, and that she ran with something that most people probably would have been afraid of at first.
Right.
And she found a niche and she knew it was working. And that's even like where the back end of the catering company comes from the Pack River Store, and just like literally all the little things we do started with my mom. Mm. And me and Brittany just took it to the next level.
I love that. I love that. But so, and then, so your mom's inspiration was, she just like knew what the Pack River Store was, and then she just started thinking about, you know, I can just grow this because the people out here, this would serve them. Do you know like kind of what that vision, how it came about for her?
We started coming up here from Santa Cruz in the early 90s to visit some friends that had a bunch of property up Rapid Lightning. And then we learned that the store was for sale. So we kind of threw the idea around as a family. And then I just remember one August in, I think it was, or yeah, 1999, my mom just kind of said, hey, I'm going to go up and look at the store again. And next thing you know, she bought it, and we started a whole new journey of moving to Sandpoint, Idaho from Santa Cruz, California.
Wow. And how old were you then?
I was a freshman. I started my freshman year at Sandpoint High. So I was 13, I want to say. And my brother, that would have made my brother 11.
Wow. That must have been a little bit of a change for you.
It's a bit of culture shock.
Yeah, a little bit of a culture shock for sure. But, you know, obviously you probably grew into it pretty quickly. And I would imagine that part of that was watching your mom kind of roll up her sleeves and kind of mentor for you how you make it work.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you move to a new town and you don't have friends, family becomes a little bit more important.
Yeah.
I got closer to my brother, and still to this day, I think we're closer because of that.
Nice.
You meet friends along the way and things change, but it's like, it was a whole new thing. And especially when you're a freshman in high school, you kind of roll in expecting to want to have friends and be accepted and this, that, and the other. But when you're the new kid on the block and you walk in with flip-flops and board shorts on, like you just came off the beach and it's September in Idaho, people kind of look at you like you're nuts. So that was me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm pretty sure you learned pretty quickly that the flip-flops and the board shorts don't last very long once it hits September.
Yeah, I have Carhartts on.
Yeah, exactly.
And boots.
And so did you kind of roll right into it and you like, loved it, or was it a little bit of a struggle? Like, I want to go back, or?
Yeah, me and my brother, we always loved snowboarding and we always loved the outdoors. So it was a pretty easy transition. Being Santa Cruz kids, we miss skateboarding a little bit. But now that I cook for a living and my belly line doesn't really agree with skateboarding, that's cool. I can give it up.
Yeah, there you go. There's other things you can do instead. Which is great. And so then, so how long after you got here did your mom purchase the store?
We already owned it, right?
Oh, okay.
Right in 2000, she had owned it. From there, it was just kind of her figuring out that we needed to make changes. And, I mean, you go from a corporate job to owning your own business, and you quickly learn that you're not getting a paycheck written to you anymore, and you shift gears and you make it work. And my mom was unbelievable at it, just unbelievable. It was
awesome.
It was amazing to watch. And I think it's one of the coolest things, you know, to this day that I've ever seen happen. And, you know, I'm sure her stress level is 10 times what mine was, having two kids and a business that wasn't making money. But, you know, the fact that she stood up and did it and
kept going. And so did you and your brother get to be a part of like rolling up your sleeves and learning the entrepreneurial side of the business?
Oh, definitely. I always loved helping my mom in the kitchen. Still to this day, I love cooking with my mom. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Awesome.
But a weird story is like one right when we moved up here, not long after, I remember me and my mom had the flu so bad we couldn't even get off the couch.
Oh.
And there's my 11-year-old brother essentially running the Pack River store at 2000, ringing people up and taking care of people. And he literally stayed home just to man the store because we couldn't get off the couch, you know? And it was, I mean, that's family. Like,
yeah.
It,
do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
To
this day, I mean, that wouldn't fly anymore, but it was pretty cool to watch.
I love that. I love that foundation. And then, so was there anybody that your mom kind of leaned on for guidance or, you know, to get some help on? Because there's a lot of aspects of business that, you know, most people are afraid to step into being entrepreneurs because they don't know that part of it.
I definitely think being a banker, she kind of had an upper hand on that already. She kind of knew and watched people come and go and fail, if you will. We do have some great friends that live up the road, that had owned their own businesses for a long time, and that were there for us, that helped us out a lot.
Nice.
Free labor, if you will. And just, they wanted to see my mom succeed. And I mean, again, that's what community and friendship's all about is, you know, you see somebody kind of jump off the cliff and do something that they've never done before, but you help them out and you get them on their feet and get them running. And then from there, you know, once you're on your feet, it's pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep it going.
Yeah, exactly. People just got to keep you propped up, right?
Yeah.
A little bit. Well, and I would imagine that, and I think when we had talked originally, you had said that that the community, your mom kind of saw a need for, you know, the people that were out there, you know, it's like rather than having to go all the way into town. So she kind of was feeding off of the need of the community. So was that kind of what helped guide you guys and move you along as well?
Oh, definitely. I mean, still to this day, people talk about my mom as this person that helped this community and brought back the Pack River Store to life. Especially when she owned it, not me anymore, but there was a laundromat. We still have the showers, but you know, she was extremely community motivated and wanted everybody to feel comfortable at her business and didn't want, you know, it didn't matter what walk of life you were coming from. She had, you know, an open door and open arms, and she wanted to make sure you were happy when you were leaving, and to a fault even at times. And and that's my mom, you know, she's a very lovable, amazing person.
That's so great. And I would imagine that she helped to shape a community, whereas, you know, it was maybe when it was just people that were stopping in for beer or cigarettes and dusty candy bars, it would be a come and go thing where, you know, they might exchange a word or two here or there. But when she started incorporating the food aspect and it gave people a place to gather, is that kind of how it went?
Totally. 100%. I mean, even if it was just with her or their families or whatever, I mean, it definitely gave a community gathering. Like, you know, we used to joke around about people drinking on the porch and having fun. You know, we are talking 20 years ago when town was a little smaller, but a part of me even misses that too. You know, I miss the regulars coming in and, you know, cracking a tall boy on the porch and telling the stories of, you know, back in the day, if you will, about, you know, what Rapid Lightning was and how it is now. And, you know, it's just, things are changing and it's great. But it was really cool to watch my mom become a part of this community where there is a lot of, you know, lore, if you will, and a lot of things to talk about and a lot of things that went on up Rapid Lightning.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, and I would imagine that people still do come and gather to hear those kinds of things. I mean, it's so conducive for that kind of exchange and gathering of people. I love it. It's like stepping back in time almost.
Definitely. And that's something me and Brittany kind of see as our focus, is keeping it that way and keeping it kind of rustic and old school, if you will, and very family orientated. You know, we want you to bring your kids out. We want you to, you know, bring grandma and grandpa out when they come to town. That's something that we love to see. We're very, very family orientated. You know, we just love, you know, that aspect of life, and it's important to us.
Yeah. And it's so nice that with Sandpoint being the community that is this close, but to just be able to drive, you know, 15 miles or however far it is from town, to just kind of have that old, rustic kind of, you know, quaint place to feel like the roots of this area is a wonderful thing.
So, yeah, it's almost like a whole different community, if you will. Yeah. I mean, I know town has things going on, and we like to be a part of it as well and kind of take part in it. But there's other things going on in other parts of this, you know, county, if you will. I mean, Hope, us, you know, Sagal, there's little pockets and these little cool things that people that just live in town and stay in town, they're not aware of.
Right, exactly. I know I had a friend of mine in town a couple of weeks ago. We went out and had lunch at Pack River Store, and she's like, I had no idea that there was anything like this even around anywhere, and to just have it be so close by. So, I mean, she loved it. And then just being able to grab a bottle of wine and plop it on your table, it's like, it's kind of one of those things that it just feels good. Bottom line.
That's 100% the goal right there.
Yes, exactly. So we hope it never changes. Anyways, we need to go to break, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sometimes the biggest threats to North Idaho forests come from things that are difficult to see. If you're a longtime resident or new to the area and own 10 or more acres of timberland, that asset might be under attack. Every year, insects and disease destroy entire forests of healthy timber, and your forest is fair game. Idaho Forest Group can help prevent insect or disease damage on your land by conducting a free, no-obligation assessment. We'll send an expert forester to check for insect damage and suggest a timber management plan that will help keep your trees healthy and prevent insects or disease from paying you a visit. And if selective thinning is called for, the trees we remove might put cash in your pocket. People new to the area or longtime residents have invested a lot in North Idaho. Don't let insects destroy your timberland. To schedule a visit by an Idaho Forest Group forester, visit ifg.com.
It's a great time of year to visit Sweet Lou's as we welcome back college and NFL football. Make Sweet Lou's your football headquarters for every game, including Monday Night Football. Stop by today for all your Sweet Lou's favorites and check out the new menu items. With a full bar in Ponderay and tons of beers on tap at both locations. On Front Street in downtown Coeur d'Alene and Highway 95 in Ponderay. Come hungry, stay late, eat well. Sweet Lou's.
At Bowes Builders, demand is through the roof. To keep up, his business needs a stronger foundation.
Cut the car, right? Just one sec. Bowes Builders, this is Bow. This weekend? Yeah, we can do it.
Indeed can help him hire the people he needs.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job, you immediately get your short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Now the race is on and here comes Brad in the backstreet. Party is going to the inside.
High energy 90s country pop artist Sawyer Brown hits the stage this November.
Well, I ain't first class, but I ain't white trash. You want it a little crazy too.
Live in the Ponderay Pavilion. Get tickets today at northernquest.com.
Always some girls do.
See our schedule, check our helpful links, or stream us anywhere, all at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and have taken the risks to do work and live lives that they genuinely love. I'm Lisa Marquardt. I am a certified career and life coach. My guest today is Alex Jacobson, and Alex is the chef and owner at the Pack River Store. And we've been talking about kind of the evolution and how Alex got the inspiration and motivation from his mother, who started the Pack River Store, and how that gave him an opportunity to launch his career. So, Alex, was there a moment or did it just kind of evolve that you were going to become a chef and you were going to step into that world? Do you remember?
My mom has a great friend that came into the store one day when I was helping her, and she just looked at me and said, "You should be a chef." and really, it hit home. I kind of had two things in mind in my life anyways, was forestry or cooking. And when Linda came in and said that to me, it hit home. And then I think I might have been a junior in high school at the time, and I... Wow. Through my senior year, really thought about it. And then when I graduated, I probably did some questionable things like every 18-year-old does, and learned that I should probably go to school. So I took out the riskiest loans possible and went to culinary school in San Francisco.
Wow. So you went right out of high school or a little after?
I think I was in town for maybe 12, maybe a year, maybe at most. And then I, like I said, you know, my mom didn't really love the idea. So I hopped online and this lady named Franny Mae that just gives money to anybody to go to college, gave me money. So I went.
That worked out well.
Terrible decision, but.
Yeah. But so why did Linda deem you should be a chef or you should be a
cook? She just saw it in me. She's the friend that we had up the road that just spent a lot of time, like family friend. You know, I kind of look at her as a second mom.
Awesome.
And, you know, when people like that in your life say things to you and it hits home, you listen to them. Well, hopefully you do.
Well, if they're, you know, it depends kind of what their motivation is too. You know, it's like, well, you know, because a lot of times there's those individuals that come into our lives that say, you should do this to help your mom, or you should do this because, you know, it looks like you have the skills, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the passion and the desire for it.
Yeah, Linda had no intention of me helping my mother.
Oh, interesting.
She more had the intention of, she could tell I loved being in the kitchen, could tell that, you know, there was a spark, there was something going on that in me that she didn't see anywhere else. I mean, I knew her since I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Wow.
So at the time, you know, being 17, 16 years old, you know, we'd known each other for 9+ years.
Right.
And well, maybe 7 years. And she just saw this light and this, you know, spark of me being in a kitchen. And it stuck with me, and I just ran with it.
Right. So, and did she kind of introduce that concept to you, or was it kind of something that was brewing within you anyways?
No, I had no idea what I was going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I liked being with my mom in the kitchen. I liked the Pack River store. You know, I kind of always hoped I'd be in the position I am right now.
Mm.
But I had no idea how I was going to get there.
Yeah.
But then when, you know, the light went off, and when somebody mentioned something to you and you kind of think about it over a year and then you just take the leap, you either have it or you don't, especially in the culinary world.
Right. Exactly. And then how did you determine that you were going to go to the California Culinary School?
At the time, I had left my mom at the Pack River store, and I was working at Spud's in town. Everybody knows Spud's. We all love Spud's. And
that was back with Peter?
Yeah, Peter Miko owned it, and Gail Miko at the time. But they had a couple head chefs come through, and both of them had graduated from California Culinary Academy. And I was lucky enough to work for both of them. I was both of them. I was kind of their right-hand man, sous chef, if you will. I wouldn't give myself the title at the time. And they both said, yeah, you should go to the school. And, you know, like I said, I kind of made questionable decisions. So I listened to them and listened to Linda, and I, you know, got in my car with as many things that fits in a Subaru and drove to San Francisco.
San Francisco, here I come.
Yeah.
Interesting. And so was it difficult to get in? Was there anything you had to do to get in, or?
No, I mean, at the time, a lot of these schools were pretty money hungry. So, yes, there was some entrance exams, like you had to show your grades, da-da-da.
Right.
You had to show some proof of working in the industry. But they were pretty open, you know, they wanted you to be there.
Right.
It's definitely the kind of school where you take what you want from it. And I'm sure I took a lot more than a lot of the peers I went to school with.
Hmm.
I'm sure about 90% of them are not in the culinary industry.
Wow. Really? 90%?
Oh, yeah. It's a rough industry to be in.
Yes.
And you have to be pretty committed. I don't even blink at working 16 hours a day. It's just
part of the deal.
Yeah, it's normal to me. It's just, you cook, you hang out, you be in the kitchen, and, you know, finish a task and go on to the next.
Right. So when you're driving out to San Francisco, you've been living in Sandpoint for how many years?
Just under 5.
So what was that drive like?
It was interesting. I mean, I definitely had some fun on the way. I had a girlfriend at the time. We stopped in Seattle. We stopped in Portland. And then we drove from Portland to San Francisco, and I had an uncle that was nice enough to let me stay at his house for a while till I got my feet on the ground, and then found this amazing house in Berkeley, and, you know, we just went to school and worked, and the girlfriend at the time kind of listened to my mom and went to work for Wells Fargo of all places, so.
She didn't get that message, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Got it. But so then, and what was your experience like? I mean, I'm fascinated with culinary school. I mean, I would just love to know exactly what all the processes are like and what the classes are like. Because, I mean, like, to me, it's like training you. I mean, to me, art, food is just an art. It's edible art. So it's like, what do you learn and how do they go about making sure you know everything?
I mean, kind of like I said, you either have it or you don't. Mm. It's something they're definitely trying to teach you, but there's a knack. There's something that you have to have. There's a drive that you have to have if you want to succeed in this. I mean, it was a blast. You go through so many different classes at a pretty rapid rate, but learning about food in Asia, learning about food in South America, learning about different European countries and their food, it's amazing how much information you can learn all at once. And it's fun to do it because, I mean, our class was pretty small. I think I had about 15 other kids in my class with me. So you just show up and cook every day. If it wasn't a business class, I should say.
Right.
You just showed up and cooked and, you know, talked about food and really immersed yourself in what you were doing at the time.
And so do they teach you a lot of the skills first and then you get to apply it in your own artistic way? Is that how it evolves?
The artistic thing, I think, is up to you. Okay. I mean, school's pretty rigid. They want you to learn certain things and have a certain skill set. You're right. Like, you need to know how to use a knife, obviously, if you're going to be a chef. And that's definitely one of the first things that they teach you. But again, me being in a kitchen, it seemed kind of repetitive to, like, teach kids how to small dice something when I already knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. But it was still learning the French, I guess, way of you know, the terminology. And instead of me saying small dice, it's brunoise, or, you know, just using the proper terminology that when you grow up in kitchens and chef tells you something, you don't look like you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with the 90% that are probably not out there in that world because they didn't have that growing up and they didn't already have that kind of that natural sense of application to it too.
I mean, I also think it's a mindset too. I was at the very end, I think, of a, I don't know how to word this, like a cult almost of the kitchen where, yelling and violence and, you know, the Gordon Ramsay way of things, if you will, was okay. That kind of stuff doesn't fly anymore in the kitchen. You know, I've had pans thrown at me. I've had people tell me terrible things.
Right.
That we probably can't say right now. But I was big enough to, you know, I wanted it so bad that it didn't affect me.
Oh, I love that.
And, you know, the coming up in that period of time in the kitchen, if you didn't have thick skin and you couldn't take a little bit of a beating, then you weren't going to make it. I mean, if I ever treated anybody like that, I would feel awful nowadays.
Exactly.
And I think it's more about learning and passing on the knowledge more than being a jerk.
Yes. There's different methods of delivery to get the message across for sure. But I always kind of wondered how they have all these shows that show the competition among the chefs. And I mean, is that kind of the way it is in culinary school as well? Is it super competitive?
Well, and at work in the big city, you know, in bigger cities, San Francisco, New York, Boston, I'm sure, line cooks are fighting, you know, they want the next sous chef job. They want the next chef job. They want to stick out amongst their peers. They want to be the best. And it's a great place to learn how to cook because everybody's hungry and everybody wants to be the best. And to really stick out and to be the best, you really have to be the best.
Right.
And it really drives somebody to want it even more and kind of give up things in life and focus on exactly what you want out of this.
Yep.
You know, you can be a line cook forever or you can strap down for a few years and put the time in and earn yourself the position that is chef.
Yep. And hence you look at 16-hour days as not that big of a deal because it's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, we have way more to talk about, but we need to go to break again, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
When it's time to change your windshield, you might think it's just glass and no big deal. Actually, it's a very big deal. Your windshield will protect you in an accident, and it's critical that it be installed properly to ensure your safety. At Specialty Auto Glass, their technicians are AGSC certified and will do it right. Call Specialty Auto Glass at 263-2600 and schedule your appointment today. They can even come to you with their mobile service. Specialty Auto Glass on Schweitzer Plaza Drive, just off Highway 95 in Ponderay.
It's always so exciting to taste the newest vintage of wines being made here at the Ponderay Winery. All our 2020 Merlot grapes have been crushed, and we anticipate they will produce another award-winning wine similar to the 2019 Merlot, October's Wine of the Month. The 2019 Merlot received a double gold medal from the Washington Wine Festival and a gold medal from the Sommelier's Choice Competition in San Francisco. Come have a bottle and pair it with one of our many delicious creations from our kitchen. Fall is a wonderful time to be a wine drinker, so come see us for an enjoyable evening at the Ponderay Winery.
Brave, bold, Idaho.
Look to throw under pressure. He's brought down. Coming into the backfield like a missile. It's Trey Walker. Takes him down at the 41-yard line.
It's Vandal football Saturday at 2 against Portland State. It's homecoming and Vandal Fest. Witness the grand opening of ICCU Arena. Catch the parade. Pack the dome for the big game. And get discounted admission to Vandal volleyball at 7 with your football ticket.
Your weekend just got better because this Friday through Sunday is another fresh weekend sale at Yokes. 3 full days of crazy low prices on Yokes' freshest seasonal products throughout every department. Pop into your neighborhood Yokes Fresh Market to save on some of our very best items, like select 32-ounce bags of Food Club cheese shreds, $4.99 each. Your first two select 48-ounce cartons of Dreyer's ice cream or sherbet, $1.99 each. Pumpkins are 19 cents per pound. Select 27 to 33.9-ounce Draft House pizzas are only $3.99 each. First three, please. Hormel Smoked Honey Ham is $4.99 per pound. And your first 5 16-ounce packages of Select Jennie-O Ground Turkey are just $2.49 each this weekend. Come join the Fresh for All this Friday through Sunday at your neighborhood Yokes Fresh Market's Fresh Weekend Sale. Best products, best prices, best weekend ever.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have had the courage and taken the risks to do work and live lives that they genuinely love. I'm Lisa Marquardt. I am a career and life coach. And my guest today is Alex Jacobson, who is the chef and owner at the Pack River Store. And before we went to break, we started talking a little bit about culinary school and Alex's experience of working in the Bay Area in various restaurants. And you were talking a little bit about how, you know, you want to be the best and there is that competition. And so did that inspire you, motivate you? How did that affect you?
Yeah, every day I want to be the best. I always want the Pack River Store to be the best restaurant. I always want to be the best chef in town. I don't know if it's hard-headedness or if it's, you know, the drive to want to be successful. You know, I think it's a combination of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, when you're the best, you've reached your goals. And not that I think that goals should ever stop. You know, you should always be learning. You should always be kind of recreating and rethinking what you're doing and trying to be better every day.
Yeah. And so you spent 8 years in the Bay Area as a chef in various restaurants. Is that correct?
Give or take.
And then, so speaking of goals, was there some achievable goal that you were looking for that would say to you, now it's time for me to head back? Or was there certain experiences you wanted under your belt?
I mean, at the time, I wanted to be a chef of some high-end restaurant. You know, I didn't know what restaurant, I didn't know where. I was lucky enough to work for some just over-the-top amazing chefs. One of them has a crazy book, Salt, Fat, Heat, and Acid.
Oh, I love that book.
I worked for her for about 3 years. And then the other people I worked with, they were on the top of their game. And it was amazing to be with these chefs and be with these people and to learn from them and take their knowledge and be a part of their team.
Yeah, awesome. And so, you know, I guess that was something else I was trying to get to is that, you know, I have witnessed the competitive side of it, but is there also kind of that personal satisfaction of being able to pass on, you know, the gift and the things that you have learned and the processes that you've learned with other chefs as well to kind of let that grow? And
totally. I mean, the stipulation of some of the making of the cured meat that I've learned from a few chefs, part of the stipulation was you have to keep teaching people, you have to keep this alive.
Love that.
You know, there's very few people in this country that know how to make bacon anymore, that know how to make ham, that know how to make charcuterie. And a part of learning that from them was, this isn't a secret. You need to pass it on. So somebody else like you that appreciates it can grab a hold of it and run with it and show other people.
Right.
And also I think kind of what you're talking about too, like, yes, there was a lot of competitiveness, but we were always a team. You know, at the end of the day, you can't feed 200 plus people in a restaurant setting if you're not a team.
Yes.
So you always walked away with high fives and drinks and this, that, and the other, and all the silly things that come with restaurants, but you still wanted to be competitive and be the best, you just wanted to be the best on the team. You know, you wanted to be the captain, if you
gotcha.
Will.
Yeah, I love that. And then, when was it the moment that you said, I've gleaned as much as I can from this experience in San Francisco and I'm ready to go back? Was there a certain timing or was it a goal or how did that play out?
That moment never really happened. I came back up to Sandpoint to my sister's wedding and kind of rekindled something that I had with my wife, Brittany. And her being the smarter of the two of us refused to move to the Bay Area, because who wants to live in the Bay Area anymore?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yes.
So I gave it a year and dropped my title as sous chef and ran back up to North Idaho.
Wow. And so, yeah, it wasn't like anything necessarily had to happen to say I'm ready to go back. It was
love.
I think that's a great motivation.
And I mean, I was really lucky to run an amazing restaurant in Spokane at the time called Sante. I walked into that. I got sous chef there right away. And then from Sante, I was also lucky enough to run Crafted in Coeur d'Alene as their chef for about 2.5 years before I came to the Pack River store.
That's awesome. And so then, but how perfect, Brittany, and you are like, you kind of have both sides of the store covered.
Yeah. Like, and yin and yang, if you will, too.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'm heated and she's the calm one and vice versa. And it's good to have somebody that you have 100% faith in backing you at all times. It definitely makes you stronger and more confident in your decisions and definitely jumping off the cliff of owning a small business. I opened a restaurant for somebody and they paid me a god awful amount of money. And I literally just turned around and handed it all to my mom and emptied my savings accounts and said, I'm going to buy this. And you know, in business, they teach you like, hey, the first time you ever, you know, have payroll, it's going to be shocking if you're not a millionaire. And yeah, it was shocking. You know, all the money we'd made that week was quickly gone.
Yep.
So And we learned, we grew really fast, and we understood that financing was all of a sudden the most important part of our lives, and that we really had to focus for the first, you know, we learned it took us about 2 years to really get on our feet. You know, we love where the store is at right now, but we do want to see, you know, some small growth, like we were saying, like make the kitchen bigger and kind of give it a little bit more oomph. But we're just in awe about where we've gotten in the last 3.5 years.
I love that. And so, you know, it's just, to me, it's always amazing that when you have that inspiration, you have that drive, it's the scary things like payroll show up, the, you know, the money coming in looks great. The money going out looks frightening, but still, no matter what, that drive, there's nothing that's going to stop you.
Yeah, then the walk-in breaks and there goes more money. And it's like, yeah, exactly. You can't let things like that discourage you. You just have to understand that it's life. And I mean, your car breaks, so things in your business are going to break too. And you just have to keep maintenance and understand that life's going to go on, you know. Yeah, exactly. It might be a bad month, but hopefully the next month is better. And you just, you know, keep a smile on your face and keep people happy and keep people wanting to come back. And
because, you know, the difference, I have to say, between doing something like you're doing that you're super passionate about and your heart and your soul are invested in it versus working at a company, for example, as you mentioned, Wells Fargo, where it's not your heart and soul. It's like when you're doing that kind of a job so frequently, what runs through your mind is, I can't wait to stop doing this. Versus when you're doing what you're doing, the words that run through your head is, you know, I'll figure it out. No matter what it is, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I hopped into this with the mentality of failure is not an option. Because like I said, we kind of dumped literally every single penny we had into it. And we were going to have nothing if we didn't succeed. So, I mean, I guess that's a fire behind you to be successful. Yeah, and I mean, the other joys that come from it is paying people and having employees and watching, you know, even teenagers that grow from dishwashers that are now my prep cooks that now can cook online. Like, it's amazing to just have people around you and, you know, pay them and watch them grow and have them be a part of your lives too.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm totally guilty of having employees be friends instead of employees,
which is not a bad thing,
which is a good and bad thing. It is.
Yeah.
But, you know, you find joy in a lot of different things when you buy a business all of a sudden.
Yes. And a friend of mine is a chef of a couple restaurants in California. And every time I go in there and he's in the kitchen and his staff and they're all sweating and they're running around with their chicken, like chickens with their heads cut off. And I say, just look out at the people and the looks on their faces and how much joy you're bringing their lives by doing what you're doing. And I imagine that's part of the inspiration for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. That smell that brings you back to childhood, that dish that mom used to make, that grandma used to make. I mean, it's one of my favorite things when catering is sit down with people and say, is there any family meals that I can recreate that'll mean more than my catering menu to you.
I love that.
You know, that's what food is all about in my mind. Yep. Yes, it's art, but at the end of the day, you know, it keeps you alive, first of all.
There's that.
But you have so many memories about food and even Thanksgiving and Christmas. I mean, humans have so many things that are interactive with food.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And to just bring somebody a meal and see the smile on their face is unbelievable.
Absolutely. Alex, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. And thank you for sharing your path and your journey. And I wish you the best and growth as you'd like. So that's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Please join me for my next show on November 3rd. In the meantime, remember, now is your life. Get out there and really live it.
KQ46 CU, 1450 KBFI, Bonners Ferry.